Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
This week on Rewind, your week in review.
Battleground Wisconsin indeed. 1.9 million voters cast absentee ballots. President Trump wins 58 of 72 counties, but 70,000 more votes in Milwaukee and Dane counties for the Democratic candidate tips the state for Joe Biden. Mr. Fitzgerald goes to Washington, joining the 7 incumbent U.S. House members who were reelected. Republicans gain 2 seats in the state Senate, but lose 2 seats in the Assembly. And COVID-19 cases statewide set records. Rewind, your week in review for November 6th.
I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
Well, we may not know who won the presidency nationally, although we're closing in every hour, it seems. But here's what we can tell you about the voting in Wisconsin. Number one, Joe Biden wins Wisconsin by about 20,400 votes out of about 3.29 million votes cast. That was 72% of residents 18 and older, more than 85% of the 3.68 million registered voters. It was a record number of votes cast for president. President Trump won, I think, 58, maybe 57 of Wisconsin's 72 counties. But Democrats in Milwaukee and Dane counties tipped the state for Biden. Let's just look inside that right now. President Trump got 32,890 more votes in 3 key counties, Milwaukee, Dane, and Waukesha. But in those same 3 counties, Joe Biden got 95,500 more. So that's just going a little bit deeper. But the Trump campaign says it will seek a recount, which it cannot do until the last county officially reports. Then it has 24 hours to seek a recount, which may cost it, well, the recount in 2016 cost Jill Stein $2 million, but the law was changed, and they've also got to pick up in a recount the cost of the State Elections Commission, so it could be more than that. Former Governor Scott Walker notes that overturning 20,000 votes is a, quote, high hurdle. Your turn, JR, your perspective on the Wisconsin vote for president.
Looking at what happened, big picture, Donald Trump actually increased his vote total from 4 years ago. What's different is that the anti-Clinton vote from 4 years ago didn't all go to Donald Trump. Joe Biden did better a lot of places. So then you look at like what really drove Biden's margins. One, in Milwaukee, the city of Milwaukee turnout was not that different from 4 years ago. The suburban areas of Milwaukee, however, did turn out much larger than 4 years ago and helped drive Biden's turnout. The real rock star, though, for Joe Biden is Dane County. Here's a perspective for you, Steve. 20 years ago, in the 2000 presidential election, Dane County accounted for 8.9% of the overall presidential vote that year. It went to Al Gore with 61.1% of the vote. On Tuesday, it accounted for about 10.4% of the statewide tally and went 75% for Joe Biden. I can't find another county in Wisconsin that has increased its share of the overall state total and gotten that much more partisan at the same time in that time period. It's amazing the driver that Dane County is for Democrats. Now, it's a good and bad thing for Democrats, to be honest with you. It is great for statewide elections. It also is a problem for Republicans because of Epic and other employers like that. You see a continued influx of young, college-educated workers moving into Madison. That's going to make that disparity grow as we go forward. The problem for Democrats is, in legislative races, it means Republicans can pack those Democrats into legislative districts, and it doesn't maximize their performance in a legislative map. So it's a good and a bad thing for Democrats in that way. But for Joe Biden, it was phenomenal. It helped drive his victory, and Dane County is going to be a rock star. I mean, I know national media like talk about crucial Waukesha County. Let's give props to Decisive Dane going forward about what if factors become in statewide races in Wisconsin.
Okay, but I'm still fascinated by Waukesha County, having worked as an editor a few years there, and I just want to look at their results. Donald Trump got 17,000 more votes in Waukesha County than he did in 2016. But Joe Biden got 24,643 more votes in Waukesha County, a bedrock county for the Republicans. But, J.R., one more thing before we move on to the U.S. House. It's fair to say that outstate northern Wisconsin still went for Trump, and even in a slightly bigger way than 2016?
Well, it depends on where I'm looking, because, again, back that if you go back to 2016, you had, you know, obviously Trump and Clinton on the ballot. You had Jill Stein. You had Gary Johnson, Libertarian. You had write-ins for a guy who kind of ran as a Republican, but not really as a Republican banner. Anyway, that anti-Clinton vote, it goes into your point about Waukesha County. Trump got 6% of the vote in Waukesha County 4 years ago, which was an underperformance for a Republican. He dipped below 60% of the overall vote on Tuesday. Again, that anti-Clinton vote, which it's shorthand. I mean, it wasn't all like anti-Clinton, but the people didn't vote for Clinton. They didn't all like coalesce along Donald Trump this time with fewer choices. Joe Biden picked up some people, which underscores his favorability. He wasn't as liked as Clinton. You could argue there's also factors like sexism involved, and some people bring that up. But the bottom line is Joe Biden did better in some of these rural counties than what Clinton did, because Trump's winning margin went up, but Biden's number went up as well from where Clinton was. And that every little bit helps around the state and allows a place like Dane County to be so decisive statewide.
Well, okay, kudos to our 1,850 local clerks for handling a record 1.955 million absentee ballots. So they just that's just a phenomenal job. Okay, now let's hear from Governor Evers saying, President Trump, you want a recount, bring it on. And our election administrator, Megan Wolf, saying there was no problem and it's impossible in Wisconsin to steal votes, a term we're hearing nationally. Please.
Our elected elections officials worked so goddamn hard. We had a smooth election under extremely difficult conditions, such as a pandemic. It's just more of the same BS, frankly. Real tired of it. You have an opportunity for a recall. Well, it's well within your rights to do that. Recount. So do it. Get that recount done so we can move on with our lives.
There is no opportunity to count a ballot that did not go through that incredibly meticulous process to make sure it was issued correctly, to make sure that it's counted correctly. And then again, it also has to go through those three steps of canvas at the municipal, the county, and the state level before we have certified results.
The recount statutes say that any aggrieved party, so it has to be one of the top two vote getters, if they're within 1% of the margin of victory, that they can request a recount. If it's between 0.26% and 1%, then the aggrieved candidate pays for that recount. If it's 0.25% or less, then that cost is absorbed by the state. There's no automatic recounts in the state of Wisconsin.
Now let's focus on the U.S. House results, J.R. Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald will be going to Washington as the 5th District Representative, replacing longtime Dean of the Wisconsin Congressional Corps, Jim Sensenbrenner. He got 60% of the vote against his Democratic challenger. And I'm going to go around and I'm going to give you a chance to end with the Ron Kind 50% victory. So let's just look quickly. 1st District, Brian Stile, about 61% of the vote. 2nd District, Mark Pocan, 70% of the vote. 3rd District, I'll leave that to you to talk about, JR, in a minute. 4th District, Gwen Moore, 75% of the vote. 5th District, we mentioned Mr. Fitzgerald, 60% victory. 6th District, Glenn Grothman, incumbent Republican, 59% of the vote. Tom Tiffany, just elected in a special election, got a full two-year term with 61% of the vote. And in the 8th District, Republican Mike Gallagher, 65% of the vote. I just want to make two points. Of the 6 incumbents who were reelected, their average vote margin, 65%. Okay, now, JR, talk to us about the 3rd District and Mr. Kind versus Derek Van Orden.
Well, Kind was put in the watch list 4 years ago because Donald Trump won his district. Kind then won re-election with 60% of the vote 2 years ago. Going into the Tuesday, people I talked to thought it was a long shot for Van Orden to beat Kind, because they were seeing the polling that we were seeing that showed Donald Trump losing Wisconsin by 5, 6, 7, 8 points, more than that in some polls. And the theory was, for Van Orden to have a shot, Trump had to have a narrow win or a very narrow loss. Well, it turns out he had the very narrow loss, but Ron Kind has that cross-party appeal. Plus, he's an entrenched incumbent. He is well-known. Derek Van Orden had probably zero name ID in that district back in like February because he's new on the scene. All those things added up to Kind having an advantage. He also spent down a $3.1 million war chest to at least, it was $1.4 million and change at the middle of October. We'll see how much more he spent between then and the election. But now what I'm watching going forward is, what does Ron Kind's district look like after new maps are drawn? If you're a Democrat, you want Ron Kind to pick up, go a little bit farther east, pick up Iowa and Sauk counties, both won for Biden on Tuesday. If you're Republican, you want Ron Kind's district to stretch farther up the Mississippi River. It is a line of red broken by only La Crosse County on that stretch. So the more Republican you make it, the tougher Ron Kind's life would be. And oh, by the way, the more that district changes, the more Ron Kind has to spend and get out there to reintroduce himself to people who maybe don't know him. So I'm watching kind of what's going on next, because that district hasn't been trending the right way for him. But if it changes in a good way, you know, maybe it'll help him in a couple of years.
Are you surprised, JR, that the six incumbents, excluding the Fitzgerald win and the Kind win, won with an average of 65%? Wow, what a blowout.
Because they're safe seats. They're safe seats that were drawn that way and there wasn't money spent. There was only money spent in the Kind race after the primaries. And even the Kind race, the spending for Derek Van Orden went down to a trickle the last 2 weeks because people weren't seeing the opportunity there. Incumbents just have the advantage of money, name ID, all those kinds of things. It's tough to knock off an incumbent, especially in a seat drawn to protect the incumbents.
Okay, let's turn to the state Senate. On Monday, Republicans had a 19-14 margin. After the election, Republicans gained 2-21-12 margin. Republicans over Democrats in the state assembly. Why? Two seats that had been held by Democrats, one of them, 10th District, Representative Rob Stafshult defeated Democratic Senator Patty Shotner, who'd been elected in a special election. And in Green Bay, Jonathan Hansen, a distant relative of the retiring Senator Dave Hansen, was beaten by Eric Wimberger. Any surprises in these two, JR, although we're going to stay on the state Senate for a while?
No, they're Republican seats that act like Republican seats in a jump ball election at the top of the ticket. Remember, Patty Shotner won a plus 17 Trump district in January of 2018, what was then seen as the first sign of a blue wave coming nationally. Remember, Dave Hansen, Jonathan's uncle, is perhaps the only Democrat in the face of the planet that can hold that seat in the Green Bay area. I mean, if you think about it, he survived Trump winning that district 4 years ago. It is a Republican district. Green Bay is a Republican area. Yet Dave Hansen had a unique cross-party appeal that allowed him to hang on. Jonathan Hansen didn't have that same appeal. The district, it'll be a while before I get breakdowns of each legislative district by the presidential race. The Elections Commission does that after everything's finalized. I will bet you money that the final results in both of those districts largely reflect the presidential race. It's just kind of the way things work. It is hard to overcome a district's nature unless you have unique appeal like a Dave Hansen or like Dan Kopanky, the Republican down that La Crosse seat, who I'm going to guess maybe did better than the president did in the La Crosse area.
Okay, now let's look at the eight new senators just quickly. As we said, Representative Stafshult will become the senator from the 10th. Democrat Brad Paff, who JR just mentioned, was in that fight against former State Senator Kopanky, who was recalled after Act 10. 26th District, Kel DeRoyes will take over for the State Senator Fred Risser. 16th District, Democrat Melissa Sargent will take over for Mark Miller. 28th District, the first Republican African-American state senator in Wisconsin history, Julian Bradley, will represent the 28th District after the retirement of David Craig. 14th District, Representative Joan Baldwin will become the next Republican senator after Luther Olson did not seek re-election. We mentioned Eric Wimberger winning. And in the Northeast Wisconsin District, 12th 12th Senate District, Republican Representative Mary Felskowski. Now let's take a quick look at the senators that were reelected. As we, State Senator Pat Teston, Republican in the 24th, Dan Fian, Republican in the 18th, Robert Wirch had no opponent in the Kenosha-based 22nd District. In Milwaukee, LaTanya Johnson, Democrat, State Senator Lena Taylor was unopposed, also a Democrat. Alberta Darling in the 8th District had a very interesting fight, but survived, challenged by Neil Plotkin. And in the 20th District, Dewey Strobel was unopposed for a new term. And in the 2nd District, Robert Coles of Green Bay. Of those re-elections, anything you want to talk about, the Darling, Plotkin, any one of those you want to highlight, JR?
I mean, you know, the polling was bad. All right, let's get that out there up front. Alberta Darling was supposedly in a tie race. She won by, I think, 8 points. Pat Teston, people I talked to didn't really think he was going to have a really difficult race because it's just such, it's more of a Trump district than a Republican district, people told me. So the fact that he won by a good margin wasn't a surprise. But again, some of the polling suggested there were opportunities there in seats that weren't on the table 6-8 weeks ago. We weren't talking about these seats being like true focuses. It was all about the 30th, the 32nd, and the 10th. But the polling suggests there's an opportunity and they spent money. I mean, all five Senate races were more than $1 million. I've never seen spending like that. I think I had in our total at least five or six assembly races that were $1 million, another three or four that were then $750,000 or more. I mean, that's a lot of spending in a wide map. Yes, and it was because the polling suggested there were opportunities, and it turned out that polling was bad. Right. So as Alberta's win a surprise, well, yeah, if you believe the polling, but if you look at the nature of the district, no. I mean, that's what we expect in that seat.
Okay, and there'll be, as I said, eight new senators in January, but shortly after that, when Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald resigns to go to Washington for the his U.S. House seat, there will be a special election that the governor will have to control. So for most of the next session, there'll be nine new senators. Okay, JR, let's talk about the Senate leaders that were elected yesterday by the now 21-member Senate Republican Caucus. Senate Majority Leader Devin Lemahue, excuse me, of Oostburg, Senate President Chris Capping of Delafield, Assistant Majority Leader Dan Fian of Fond du Lac, Senate President Pro Tem Pat Teston of Stevens Point, Republican Caucus Chair Van Wongard of Racine, and Republican Caucus Vice Chair Kathy Bernier. We're going to come back to Lemahue, but it's interesting, JR, he's in the middle of only a second term, was a junior member of finance, and now he's next to the majority leader, but I know you want to return to him later. Just thoughts on the new Senate leadership team.
It's a move toward a more conservative direction. And look, Scott Fitzgerald is by no means a moderate, all right, in the Senate Republican Caucus. He was probably the first prominent Republican elected official in Wisconsin, got on the Trump train 4 years ago, really pushed that. So, but Roger Roth, who also was vying to become the next majority leader, was viewed as more moderate than Devin. The caucus went in a different direction and went in a more conservative leadership option with Devin and Chris Capinga alongside him, the top two spots versus Roger Roth and then Alberta Darling, longtime finance co-chair, had been making calls to run for president, but she withdrew her name, as I understand it, after Devin won. She withdrew her name from the president's race, and Capping and then was elected to that position. So it's just a move in that direction.
Just real quickly, biggest loser in yesterday's voting, Senate President Roger Roth?
Yes, but also probably winning by losing. So I was told that Roger, there were four votes that ended in ties. Remember, it's a 21-member caucus right now.
Yep. Four 10-10s. Four 10-10 votes. Excuse me.
Gerald is not voting or did not vote because he's going to be leaving in January.
Right.
After four tie votes, Roger Roth made a motion to expunge the record and ask unanimous consent to elect Lemahue, the next Senate Majority Leader. That is, by definition, a classy move by somebody because he had put his heart into winning that office.
Yes.
He said he did it to present a unified caucus, and Lemahue said he was humbled by the move. So it's kind of a rare class move in politics, but very much one done for good of the caucus by Roger Roth.
Right. Okay. Still lots of news to cover. Let's talk about the assembly. Speaker Voss had hoped for the 66 member supermajority. He didn't get it. In fact, he lost two seats. That means that in the next session, Republicans will have 61 seats, Democrats 38. He lost two seats in the Milwaukee area suburbs. It's intriguing. Representative Jim Ott lost to Democrat Deb Andraka. I apologize if I mangled her name. Sarah Robinson took out GOP Rep. Rob Hutton, and the most targeted Democrat, Robin Vining, from the Tosa suburbs west into Waukesha County, won. But I think Democrats, her campaign and others spent more than $800,000 in that victory. So let's just consider the statement by Voss this week. He gave the weekly update. Assembly Republicans will battle the coronavirus, assist our businesses and especially the unemployed, work hard to revive and keep the economy of our state growing. We're also not going to ask taxpayers to pay more of their hard-earned money to your Wisconsin state government. Our police will not be defunded. What's your perspective on the very slight shakeup in the assembly?
If you had told me a month ago, 6 weeks ago, that there was going to be a jump ball presidential election in Wisconsin and Democrats would win two seats in the assembly, that's a pretty good night for them. But Democrats raised the bar because they spent so much money and so many seats, and they raised the expectation of how many they would win. But that was always predicated upon Joe Biden winning Wisconsin by 4, 5, 6 points. And every point you added beyond 4 or 5, you added more seats that could be in play. If he had gotten to an 8-point win, for example, you could have talked about a dozen seats flipping. Polling, again, was off. Jump ball election, density of 2 seats, that's a good night for them. However, politics is about perception. And the perception is that Democrats are going to win more than 2 seats. So for Robin Voss, it's a win that also masked the missed opportunities that they had. Nick Milroy, for example, up in northern Wisconsin. Originally, Robin Voss had 4 targets to try and get 2/3 majority in the assembly. Robin Bunning, Wauwatosa, Steve Doyle out on Alaska, Nick Milroy, South Range, Beth Myers up in Bayfield. Milroy won by less than 200 votes. And his Republican opponent got almost very little help from the Republican caucus and state party. Beth Myers knocked next door, dropped $460,000 on TV, won by 1,000 votes, which is basically 3 points in that assembly seat. Again, her opponent didn't get much help from the caucus or the state party. So, but again, the polling was not great and they made decisions based on what they saw. Yet they had invested in those races, it may have made a difference, but because, you know, they didn't, again, the politics drives perception, or perception drives politics. Perception is reality in politics. Perception was they were going to lose a bunch of seats. They didn't. So that's a good thing for Robin Voss, even though it kind of, like I said, covers over some things they could have done differently.
Yeah. Even though GOP Representative Scott Allen, before the election, called for a new leadership team. But okay, time's getting away. We have hit, unfortunately, record numbers of COVID positives, including 5,992 Thursday. There is a new urgency when we're about to hear appeals from Governor Evers, DHS Secretary Palm, and the Chief Medical Officer, Ryan Westergaard. Before we talk about those numbers, let's hear about those appeals, please.
There's still a virus out there. It's still killing people at record rates. And I can't believe that whether they increase their majority or not, that they're in favor of doing nothing. And so I welcome, Majority Leader Fitzgerald will still be around for a while. So if he's got some ideas, bring them on. If whoever replaces him has some ideas, bring it on. We can't do nothing. That's the bottom line. As a state, if we just let this run rampant for months, we will lose lives, and there's just absolutely no reason why we can't get it done.
We should not be having contact with other human beings that we do not live with. Hard stop. We have the ability to do this, to turn the corner, to stop the spread, but it will require us all to stay home as much as possible and reduce our social contacts to people that we live with.
We are seeing high rates of transmission and an acceleration, but we're not seeing exponential growth. And that means we're doing something to slow it down. Yes, it could be worse. All the things we're doing have kept it in check, but we're just not doing them well enough. We're not doing them aggressively enough.
I just want to take a look at some of these numbers that make the point that the governor and Palm and Westergaard just made. We have now seen repeatedly in 1 week more than 5,000 positive cases daily. Their seven-day average as of, I think that briefing was on Wednesday, was 4,839, double what it was 1 month earlier. Hospitals are stressed. DHS Secretary Palm said a very interesting thing that we didn't have on the video. She said, a negative test isn't a reason to go out and meet up and party. And all 72 counties are now reported as having very high levels of virus. Okay, related to this, the Supreme Court made a decision this week to not get involved in the 20% occupancy. Can you fill in the blanks on that, JR?
The case is already before the Third District Court of Appeals based in Wausau. That court had placed on hold the governor's limits on in-person public gatherings. Evers had asked via DOJ, Department of Justice, for the Supreme Court to take the case and quickly decide it. By not taking it up, it remains with the Third District. And oh, by the way, the original order expires today. So even if the court issues a decision today, it's almost like a moot thing because the order expires. Now, the next question becomes, what's the Third District Court of Appeals do in terms of like whether there's authority to issue the order in the first place? Because Evers could, in theory, issue a new one. But in practical matters, it hasn't been enforced. Most of the time, it has been out there. So we haven't had any limits on in-person gatherings really for a couple weeks now, several weeks now.
Right, which has the effect of still staying the Court of Appeals order, the governor's order, 25% occupancy. So that is still not in effect, right?
Okay. Okay.
All right. Let's spend a minute on a Dane County court ruling that in and of itself isn't significant, but it could be eventually. In April, voters added what was called Marcy's Law to the Constitution, giving more rights to crime victims. But Dane County Judge Frank Remington ruled this week that the constitutional change was improperly put before voters in April. Marcy's Law strengthened the ability of crime victims to be like in the courtrooms and other very complex issues that have yet to be played out. But Remington stayed his order, allowing for appeals. So at the moment, this is no big deal, but it could be. So I just want to quote quickly because I want to give JR time for his stocks. Quotes from Remington's ruling, voters deserve to know what they are voting on. The question on the ballot gave voters the wrong impression that they were only approving amendments relating to the creation rights of crime victims. The Marcy's Law for Wisconsin group says in the nearly 6 months it has been in effect, there are countless examples of Marcy's Law for Wisconsin giving victims a stronger voice in the criminal justice process. We fully expect this setback will only be temporary. So that Judge Remington's ruling will be appealed. Not a huge issue now, but it could be. Okay, JR, I'm trying to give you time for stocks. Go.
So Rizey and Devin Lemahieu, look, like I said, the caucus is going in a more conservative direction. I've asked people why I've driven this decision. Part of what I heard was that there are some people in the Senate Republican caucus that want to have somebody's going to be more, less hospitable toward Robin Voss, to stand up to Robin Voss, essentially Assembly Speaker. They don't want Robin to kind of run things. They want to have their own unique voice in the Senate Republican caucus. It's a split caucus. You have a more conservative wing and a less conservative wing. They went with the more conservative option. Going forward, the things you're going to watch are, how does Lemahieu manage this caucus compared to the way Scott Fitzgerald did? I've often talked about this. I call it the Scott Fitzgerald slow jam. He would allow that caucus to kind of find its level and come in and close the deal. We will find out come January how much we miss Scott Fitzgerald in terms of running that caucus, unless Devin can replicate that style or find a way to manage that caucus. You can't dictate Senate Republicans how to do things, but you can find a way to manage that caucus. Can he do that going forward?
Okay, we're almost into overtime. Mixed.
So Tony Evers, so good news, the veto stays intact. The not so great news is there's a challenge of the Democrat in the White House. Now, look, as we sit here right now, late Friday morning, Biden has leads in places like Georgia, Pennsylvania, Arizona, Nevada. So it's not called yet. There could be multiple lawsuits. But history has shown us that the party in power in the White House struggles in midterm elections in Wisconsin. It's been that way for 16 years. So Will President Biden create a headwinds for Governor Evers in 2022? The caveat is we've never been through a post-COVID-19 election. How do things look? Does the economy get back on track soon? Does Washington suddenly find some kind of like miracle agreement on COVID and everything turns out much better and we all are back in good shape? If those things happen, it could be a different midterm election. Okay. But if past is prologue, it could be some headwinds for Tony Evers in 2022.
You got 20 seconds for falling, my friend.
Polling, it just was off. I mean, we had this massive, like, kind of come to Jesus moment about polling 4 years ago. And Charles Franklin, director of the Marquette poll, said, hey, we got to start waiting for education. That'll help get us more of these Trump voters we missed in 16. In 18, he was dead on, had a 47-47, the last poll for the governor's race. But in 16, it missed again. Now, he was in the margin of error. His 5-point lead for Biden, but within the margin of error. But all these polls were off. There's going to be another examination of what they did wrong and whether they should change their tactics. Remember, there's a group called the Trafalgar Group out there that does things a different way. They won't disclose their methodology, which is why we don't write about them. But they were right in places like Wisconsin, right? However, they weren't perfect either. They had Georgia plus 4 or 5 for the president, where now Joe Biden's ahead. They made other calls that weren't quite accurate. Everybody's got an issue, but how do you trust them? And oh, by the way, campaigns make multi-million dollar decisions based on the polling information they get. This is like the lifeblood of a campaign to know how to run things. They need a fix soon.
Well, just a quick PS, because we're almost out of time. Washington Post at one point had, do I have this right? Biden up by 17 points in Wisconsin. And the last New York Times Siena poll, Biden up by 10 in Wisconsin. Whoa.
11, I think it was.
Yeah. 11.
Okay, that's a good call. Now, looking ahead to next week, Assembly Republicans will pick their leadership team. I assume Senate Democrats going to meet next week. JR, do you? Do you
Tuesday, know? All three caucuses left meet on Tuesday.
Okay, and local clerks will continue to double check their totals. I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
That's Rewind for November the 6th. What a week.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.